Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
Question. Does the world turn upside down when you're writing copy for prospects with money? The first time you do it, it sure seems that way. And there's a good reason for that. The rules are different for writing that kind of copy. Does that mean that the core basic aspects of psychology are different for rich people than they are for everyone else? Absolutely not. The core basic aspects are virtually identical. They're pretty much the same for all humans. But overwhelmingly, the mindset of a person with money is worlds apart from the mindset of a middle-class person and a working-class person. And as copywriters, we've been trained with materials that assume we are selling to ordinary people, not the well-off, the rich, the super rich. But there's a completely different approach you need to write copy that converts with people who have money. And we'll share what we've learned that is today. And it's a lot. But first, let me share this. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast. And most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you make extreme claims and or if you're writing copy for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, business opportunity, you may want to get a legal review after you write and before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So here's how this podcast came about. Nathan was working on a personal development offer for high-end prospects, and it occurred to him that the copywriting rules are completely different when you write for them than when you write for middle-class or working-class prospects. What we want to do on today's show is talk about those differences and suggest how each listener can improve their skills and adjust their mindset when they need to get to write offers for this consumer group. Nathan has had experience with this in personal growth and on other projects, and I've had a number of clients over the years whose prospects had 6- and 7-figure incomes. One that comes to mind is a company that teaches dentists to better market their practices. Like all people, these dentists had problems in their lives, but unlike most people, the fact was that their problems were different. And just as important, their mindset was different. Mm-hmm. They responded to a different kind of copy appeal than most people would respond best to. An oversimplified explanation, and we'll drill down the details in a minute, but an oversimplified explanation of the difference in mindset is the people with money are more glass half full thinkers, and the rest of us are more glass half empty. Now, there's more to it than that, and like I said, we'll get into some key differences throughout today's show. But let's take a lightning tour of the history of copywriting to show why many of us have what we've learned just doesn't apply to offers for people with a lot of financial resources. The history of copywriting overwhelmingly focused on writing to people with little or no wealth. In the mass markets of the past, that included most people. In 1900, when the population of the U.S. was 76 million, there were about 5,000 millionaires in the country, far less than 1%. Remember, the early 1900s was when Claude Hopkins, John E. Kennedy, and Albert Lasker were pretty much inventing copywriting as we know it in downtown Chicago. Okay. Flash forward to 1965. There were 195 million people in the country and about 100,000 millionaires. So 100,000 is certainly a niche market, but not a huge one. Now, this year, 2024, according to the Federal Reserve, and love them or hate them, if anyone ought to know, they should, about 24 million households in the U.S. include millionaires. That's 18% of the market. Huge change. But much of what we know about copywriting And most of what we use as rules of thumb comes from Claude Hopkins, John E. Kennedy, and Albert Lasker of the 1900s. Remember that time, 5,000 millionaires? And David Ogilvy and Gene Schwartz from the 1960s, 100,000 millionaires at the time. And many of the great copywriters that followed those pioneers based their work and their thinking on the resources from Claude Hopkins, John Kennedy, E. Kennedy, Albert Lasker, David Ogilvy, Gene Schwartz. Before I get to the change, do you want to make any comments about that? Because I know that was what sort of spurred the idea for this podcast.
Yeah, I think we're going to get into a bunch of differences between the mindsets. But as a copywriter, I think the immediate thing that pops to my mind is when I first started my career, I was working for a lot of one-off $50 per email jobs. And I was working for a lot of entrepreneurs that were bootstrapping their startup and hadn't really had major success yet. Versus now, where most of the clients that I have are at least pulling in $1 to $3 million a year, some of them $5 to $10 million a year. Back then, getting people to get the proper email marketing platform or pay for the plugin that'll help us, it was like pulling teeth. But now, all of my clients, I'm like, okay, we need to do this, this, and this. And they're like, all right, cool. Here's my credit card. Go ahead and make it happen. So just in that one aspect, the mindset of, you kind of mentioned earlier, of the way that they see money, the way that they see scarcity, it's a completely different world. And so when it comes to writing copy, the triggers that work that you have to kind of apply pressure to on one market just don't work for the other one and aren't even necessary, but you have to employ a completely different set of triggers. And so I'm interested to get your thoughts on it. I really wanted to dive into this to you or with you today, because even in my own business, I've seen just the stark difference between the two markets.
Right. So there's like three things to think about. There's the prospect, but then there's the marketer, the client, and then there's you. And, you know, so there are three different mindsets to be thinking about, but they're all pretty much similar across, you know, all points in that continuum. All right. Now, let's talk about the beginning of a huge change in business and in life, in consumer life. There were a couple of management consultants who predicted the change that was coming and that is with us, especially for this top 20% of the population, the households that have $1 million or more net worth. And that's, you know, millions and millions and millions of people we're talking about. So in 1998, B. Joseph Pine II and James H. Gilmore published an article in the Harvard Business Review. And this article led to a book the next year they published called The Experience Economy, Work is Theater and Every Business a Stage. That's not entirely true, because working in a factory on an assembly line or working in a construction crew repaving the road is not theater. But it's also true that for a lot of people, I mean, if you think, for example, of Google and you think of all the amenities they have and people bringing their dogs to work and
doing,
you know,
their
all
laundry
the,
while they're working.
Yeah, all the playrooms they have. Yeah, I mean, work and shopping have become much more emotionally nuanced experiences. And that's what these management consultants were talking about. And it's not just millionaires. It's people at the upper ends of the economic spectrum. So when it comes to writing copy for wealthier clients, you need to keep one point in mind. Rich people think differently than the people copywriting as we know it today was calibrated for. The wealthier people, they seek experience and transformation. They're not as motivated most of the time by promises of escaping or avoiding pain as they are motivated by promises of recognition, opportunity, and special treatment. This is a big revelation if you've been studying Claude Hopkins and Gene Schwartz, and not looking closely at ads in Architectural Digest and Travel and Leisure. I'm not suggesting you should. I'm just saying, whether you are rich personally yet or not, you need to keep certain things in mind when you're writing for prospects who are. And we'll cover most of the important ones today. It's important because these days there are a lot of prospects like the ones we're talking about. They make up almost 20% of the population in the U.S. I can't speak for around the world, but I think the world has a lot more wealthy people too.
I'm going to jump in real quick and expand on one point that you hit. Rubbing salt in the wound of a pain point that someone who doesn't think they have the money to solve the pain point is effective. It helps them realize how important it is to get out of that pain point. Somebody who's got an excess amount of disposable income doesn't even think about those things anymore. They say, oh, $5,000, yeah, go ahead and write a check. We'll get it taken care of. And so what you talked about when you said luxury, travel, experience, exclusivity, being part of the elite, that's one of the things that I have noticed that does work really well is status. We've talked on the podcast before about the different things that motivate people, and one of them you've mentioned is status. And status kind of works for other markets, but I mean, if I'm in medical pain or I need tires on my car, I'm not too concerned about status. I just need new tires. But if I own a luxury car and I go and get it washed every weekend and I detail it and I need new tires for it, status does matter. So it's important to show that even if you're selling the same thing to two different markets, fix the problem, fix the pain point, works great for one market. Show me how I can achieve a higher status. Elitism works for the other market.
That sets up the next part of what I prepared perfectly. Let's look at a couple major differences between wealthy prospects and everyone else. So, like we've already said, one thing that sets the affluent apart from other people is that economically, it's not just that they have more money. The affluent are optimistic, and others are more pessimistic and need more reassurance they will be protected against economic certainty. So let's go back to 2009. Remember the derivatives and the housing market and the big economic crash? Mm-hmm. Okay. After the economy crashed, two things happened. Many things happened, but here are two important ones. Ferrari kept building and selling their limited edition F430 Scuderia for $385,000. Meanwhile, the same year, Hyundai launched its assurance program. What did that mean? It meant if you bought a Hyundai and you lost your job and you couldn't keep up with the payments, you could return the car to the dealer and it wouldn't affect your credit. Okay? So compare those two things. Now, here are three possible reasons why the wealthy and everyone else respond so differently. Rich people are, by definition, higher up on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Mm-hmm. Their basic needs are covered and, for all intents and purposes, not at risk. So they're seeing a future of opportunity, not worried about one of scarcity and disaster. Mm-hmm. Here's another thing. Rich people probably have a greater risk tolerance. Not all of them, but many of them. And there are two possibilities as to why. Some may have always been that way, and that's what led them to gamble and eventually learn to take smart risks. But others have acquired it as they've become wealthier because they can afford to lose a certain amount. And again, not everyone, but a lot of them, psychologically, they can afford to see challenges as opportunities rather than threats. And this next one, listen closely, all you people who love The Secret. Closely related to this is that rich prospects have a for real abundance mindset. They've already created wealth with their mind and their actions, so they know it's possible. It's not just something they read in a book or heard at a seminar and hope it's true. So they don't have to force themselves through affirmations. They actually naturally default focus on potential gains more than potential losses. When you have some copy and the performance of the copy is mission critical, who are you going to call? Not Ghostbusters. They don't do copy critiques, last time I checked. A lot of people, from the most advanced to the up-and-coming copywriters, reach out to me. I do copy critiques. One client, Brett Alcorn, has hired me 20 times. Yep, 20 times. That's because on the very first critique I did for him, he doubled his conversions on a video sales letter. Every month, I do a handful of critiques for GKIC members. These are copywriters and small business owners who are trained and experienced, but they need another set of experienced eyes to go over their copy to take it to the next level. One A-lister told me, I go over copy like an IRS auditor. Now, I wasn't sure whether to take that as a compliment or not, but he assured me it was. He said, I can find the one flaw or several flaws in copy that no one else was able to, and make winning suggestions on how to fix them. So, when you need a copy critique, just go to garfinkelcoaching.com and click on the services tab, garfinkelcoaching.com, for a critique. Thank you. And now, back to the show.
Part of my kind of avatar building process, when I go through and I lay out who the prospect is, one of the key points that I always focus on is, are they security-minded or are they status-minded? And you'll notice this in different markets as well. Women, on average, tend to be more concerned with security. That's why soccer moms and the car that's got the all-wheel drive and the security lock brakes. And then guys, there's a reason that we don't live as long as women, on average, is because we're much more adventurous and looking for what can we do with this new GoPro? And so generally, when I'm writing, one of the things that I like to keep in mind is, are they more concerned with security or are they more concerned with status? And that plays into this division financially as well.
Okay, so let's apply this to copywriting now. So here are a couple of rephrasings or reframes when your prospects are upper income. And this just ties perfectly into what you just said. Focus on opportunity instead of scarcity. For example, instead of don't miss out on this limited time offer, try only a select few will have a chance to get in on this innovation. Mm-hmm. Now, it's really the same idea, right? You're saying there's 100 people that want this, only 10 are going to get it. But in one case, it's scarcity. I'm going to take it away from you. And the other chance, do you have that status? Are you one of the select few? Mm-hmm. So that's one way to think about reframing. Another thing is focus on opportunity rather than security. So instead of saying our program minimizes your risk, say, are you the kind of person capable of seizing this opportunity on the ground floor? So any thoughts about how you do the phrasing?
I'll just point out on that first example, both of them are kind of hinting at scarcity, but one of them is you're going to miss out, and the other one is if you get in, you're going to be the select. And that goes back to the mindset. Am I worried that I'm going to miss out, or am I interested in being one of the ones that gets in? And again, it goes back to, are you a scarcity mindset person or are you an abundance mindset person? An abundance mindset person thinks of the possibilities. A scarcity mindset person worries about what they're going to miss out on.
Yeah, really, really well put. All right, here's another thing. Publicly, a lot of rich people are very private about how much money they have, but that's probably because they don't want to be hounded by everyone else for money. But among their rich friends and in the privacy of their own homes, they're not quite as oblivious to it. The wealthy love exclusivity. Here's an example, credit cards. You may have heard of, or if you're one of our wealthiest listeners, you may have an American Express Black Card. And the Black Card, you don't apply for it. They invite you. Mm-hmm. It's by invitation only, and it costs $10,000 to get in. $10,000 to get a credit card, okay? Compare that to Capital One. which aims for every Tom, Dick, and Harriet with their What's in Your Wallet mass marketing campaign. And then the wealthy also thrive on recognition and validation of their success. Now, people who don't have as much money get hooked by a credible promise of future success. Think about it. If you've already got it, you want to be patted on the shoulder and acknowledged for it. If you don't have it, you want to have hope. You want to have your hope strengthened that you'll get it someday. So let's look at two hotels. Ritz-Carlton has a Let Us Stay With You ad, and it's a campaign for luxury, memorable vacations for those who can afford it, which recognizes the rich person's current success. Not future success, but current success. Big difference. Now, compare that to Holiday Inn's The Joy of Travel campaign, which promised vacations to everyone. So let me get into three possible reasons for these differences. Why the wealthy have this kind of mindset. I think in many cases, they really are not just higher on Maslow's hierarchy, but they're at the top of the pyramid. Some of them are the really only thing they're looking for this point in life is new forms of self-actualization, which is the very top. But like all humans, they're insecure. We're all insecure, and we like to be reminded, and they like to be reminded and praised for their enviable position in life. Another reason could be social proof. We're all in tribes, all of us. And the rich, they're in the rich tribe. Tribe members like to be with other tribe members. So showing them that fellow rich tribe members buy something or vacation somewhere adds to the sales appeal. And then there's this really technical psychological term, need for uniqueness. In 1977, two psychology professors, C.R. Snyder and Howard L. Fromkin, came up with this term, need for uniqueness. So when you see a limited edition like that Ferrari that was being sold during the 2009 economic meltdown, part of the appeal was you had to be a very unique person to get a car like that. Okay, anything about that before we jump into the copywriting tips?
It's a little bit of a side tangent, but going back to the client that you were talking about that I'm working with right now at the beginning of the show, you mentioned The Secret and the kind of connection between consciousness and your experience that kind of promises. And you can have two very distinct sets of people that have that same idea. You've got the hippie at the crystal store who's broke and is looking for the crystal that's going to attract money into their life because they believe that there's something more going on and they want to tap into it. And then you have the person that joins the Shriners or joins some other sort of esoteric elite group. And they promise to teach, hey, we can teach you how to connect with your higher self, connect with the universe at large. It's the same promise, but it's for two completely different reasons. One person is trying to struggle to get out of their desperation, and the other person is wanting the exact same thing, but they want it to get a higher sense of self, a higher sense of personal development. And so they're going to go completely different opposite directions, and the promise ultimately is the same, but the way the promise is framed and the way the promise is delivered is completely different depending on the two different markets. So I just wanted to interject with that before we went on.
That's really interesting. Like, all humans are interested in development, but are you coming from a place of scarcity or a place of fullness? Mm-hmm. Okay, so a couple of copywriting tips to help your copy speak to the needs and preferences we just talked about. Highlight current achievements instead of encouraging goals. For example, instead of saying, imagine where you could be in 5 years, you could say, this is for those who have already reached the pinnacle of success. And use language and imagery that appeals to exclusivity. So instead of saying, affordable luxury for everyone, try something like this. Only few have the resources and discernment to appreciate our resort.
Okay. I love it.
Let's say you'd like to start writing more for this market. You need a few more new skills. And the first is empathy. for people you might never have thought you would or would want to have empathy for. People richer than you, way richer than you. If you don't learn and understand how they feel, regardless of how you feel about them personally, you need to put that aside. If you don't learn and understand how they feel, you can't reach them very well emotionally. The second thing is to think in terms of legitimate opportunity instead of preventing impending tragedy. It's not unusual for everyone to have that little voice in the back of their head asking, when's the other shoe going to drop? But you don't need or want to pay attention to that voice when you're writing to sell to people who have money. And the third thing to learn is to adopt the persona and character, at least when you're writing copy, of a trusted advisor. Most people are used to making decisions on their own or following conventional wisdom. The wealthy rely on trusted advisors. Learn what that means and how to become one when you write copy. Any thoughts about the mindset shifts or the skills, rather?
I'm just going to emphasize that last point about trusted advisors. I think all markets are looking for confidence. If they detect confidence in your offer, that makes them more confident in buying it. But what I've noticed is it takes a lot to get, if you're fighting with somebody over their last $30, you've got to really instill confidence in them. Whereas when it comes to the wealthy, and I've noticed this with my clients and I've noticed this with their prospects, a lot of times it's just, can I match that vibe of confidence? You're already a confident person. You're just not quite confident in this one area that I can help you with. And if I can show you that I'm on that same level, on that same vibration of confidence, it's so much easier. And so it's the same thing, but instead of you're riddled with insecurities, let me instill some confidence in you. It's, hey, let me match that confidence that you have in every other aspect of your life. And it's a subtle difference, but it's the biggest difference in the world.
That's really well stated. Confidence. Yeah. I mean, people respond to that more than facts and figures or many other emotions, especially at the higher levels of money. All right. So last part is, how can we help you? There's a couple ways. If you have copy you've written aimed at this market and you would like it reviewed, not only for its effectiveness in general, but also using my secret 10-point list, which covers the most important differences between writing for the affluent and writing for everyone else, go to my website, garfinkelcoaching.com, and apply for a critique. And we'll leave a link on that page in the show notes. And if you need a copywriter who understands this market and can write a pinpoint targeted campaign with confidence that converts, reach out to Nathan and see if he's available. He's pretty busy, but you might want to talk to him if he's not too busy. And you can find him on Facebook, and we'll leave his email address in the show notes. And that's all I got to say.
Man, thank you. Thank you so much for exploring this topic with me. It's top of mind because, like I said, I'm working on an offer with a client right now for this exact market, and it's so underserved. The conversation that we had today is so underserved by the copywriting gurus out there. So I just appreciate you taking the time and going through it with me today.
Yeah, you're welcome. And, you know, we have to live in the past a lot because some of the most basic principles that are unchanging were enunciated and laid out in books many decades ago. But you also have to keep one eye on the present. And the fact is, 20% of the households in the U.S. have 1 million or more. And there are even more people than that who have incomes 100, 150, 200, 250,000. So in a way, this is a way of bringing everyone up to date on one portion of copywriting, not everything, but one portion that, like Nathan said, doesn't get talked about too much. So we wanted to do that for you today.
Awesome. And if you want a wealth of knowledge on copywriting for all markets,
I saw what you did there.
Definitely check out the Copywriters Podcast over at copywriterspodcast.com. We've got close to, we're inching towards 400 episodes of this podcast. So a wealth of knowledge over there, like I said. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.